Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. Coming up on the programme this week,
suicide is still the biggest killer of men under 40. In Europe, a man is four times more likely to take their life than a woman.
I think that's maybe one of those conversations that we've not quite got our heads around as a society, that you can feel lonely in a room full of people. You can feel lonely, you know, at your own birthday party, potentially.
Yeah. If I can use language and ideas that are sort of relevant and comfortable for them, it helps them to go, oh, right, okay, I see where you're coming from.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday.
The home of the UK's conversation about mental health. Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name's Mick. Thank you for your time today. As ever, thank you for your streams and your downloads of the programme. Thank you as well for your feedback for last week's show. I think Dan's story resonated with a lot of people because he was so open and honest about his journey. But also, I think he almost gave people permission with the language he was using to kind of think, oh, maybe that's me. That's me, I can relate to that. Dan also, with the work he's doing with his walking and talking organisation, offers an outlet as well for people to engage with that. There are links to last week's episode, obviously, in the podcast feed, and included within that are obviously breakdowns of where you can get in contact with Dan's organisation and maybe get involved in one of those walking and talking activities. Really great feedback. I was talking to Dan off the back of a campaign from the BACP and their Raise campaign, which was trying to highlight for men the fact that there are signs and symptoms you can look out for that might offer an insight into the fact you might be struggling with something like depression or anxiety. Symptoms associated with the first letters of the letters included in the word RAISE: risk-taking, anger, isolation, substance abuse, and exhaustion. We were talking about that with Dan from his personal experience. This week, I want to get it from like a clinician's experience, you know, a psychologist, somebody who's got counselling experience, because I wanted to get a sense of what that looked like and sounded like when people came forward and started talking about their thoughts and their feelings and how that all took place. And the person we're going to speak to is a really, really great guest. I'm going to take a punt on the fact that you'll know Rob Watton from Sky Sports News. He has been on there for 25 years. He's one of sort of our most well-known sports news broadcasters. But when he's not in the Sky Sports News studio, he does therapy sessions. He's got this alternative life where by morning, he's on the TV. By afternoon and into the evenings, he's doing sessions with people to talk about their mental health. And also, I guess, lets us know that, you know, when you think you know somebody or you're aware of what somebody's about, they might have a completely different life that you don't see on a day-to-day basis. But nevertheless, it's so, so crucial to the way things are moving now from a mental health point of view. So it's been great to get hold of Rob and to have this conversation with him and to talk about men's experiences. But first, talk about his experiences and the fact that people might be a little bit surprised to see that the guy off the TV is now going to talk to us about mental health.
Yes, I do both, and life is busy. So I am in Sky Sports normally, not today, Sky Sports News in the morning. And then I leave the studios in Austerley, and in the afternoons and into the evenings, I do counselling work. While they might seem quite similar on the surface, they're both about talking. They're both about sort of not interviewing, but sort of engaging with other people. Actually, they couldn't be more different. Sport is very extrovert. It's about the show. It's about, you know, entertainment. It's about external gratification from something you are powerless over a lot of the time, especially with refereeing decisions, completely powerless over. And the therapy work is much more introspective. Self-process is about, so while they might appear very similar, they're actually at the opposite ends of the spectrum, and the sort of the difference in them is what makes it sort of fascinating and doesn't make it feel like I'm just going from one job to the other. They feel like very separate things.
I was talking to somebody who was working, I'd written a book about how football engages with the world of mental health. And they said that they were talking about Newcastle United's foundation. And they were saying that actually when they put a Newcastle United badge on something, it becomes a Batman signal in the sky that people will warm towards. Have you had experience that people recognize you as a familiar person who talks about VAR, who talks about, you know, the results from the football of the weekend? So therefore, I can talk to you about
my feelings. Is that something that you've been able to work in, or maybe with some clients where that they feel appropriate because they go, oh, actually, I recognize this guy. I've seen him on TV for the last 25 years.
Yeah. Yes, because a lot of the work I do is with the Sporting Chance Clinic. So I'm on what's called their counseling network. And a lot of the clients that I see, not all, I see sort of lots of other people, but maybe 50 to 60% of the people I see are actually referrals on from Sporting Chance. So they are either currently professional athletes or at some stage have been. Initially, you know, that I think that's what makes the client contract so important. You know, the idea of confidentiality and because the last thing I want is for them to sit there thinking I'm trying to get a story out of them that will be, you know. So the client contract is hugely important. What we talk about in the room stays in the room. But also in that way, because I've spent 25 longer, because I was at Capital Gold Sport before that. So I have spent a long time around dressing rooms, around training grounds, around sort of sporting environments. So while I have never been in their shoes, I understand the world they have been in. And a lot of the sort of analogies and metaphors and stuff that I try and sort of bring in for them in our sessions, it's much easier if I can bring them from a sort of sporting perspective. So an example is, you know, the one we use quite often, or I use quite often, especially if I've got a sort of client who is trying to work out whether a spelling rehab would help them progress. You know, I use the analogy of a pre-season. You know, if you're struggling with addiction and you want the best chance of going forward, then let's look at it this way. Is when you are playing, or whether, you know, when you are competing, what you would do is have a pre-season. You get the best possible pre-season inside you, and that gives you the best possible chance of having the best season that you can have. You wouldn't just turn up on the first day of the season and expect to, you know, score a hat-trick away at Anfield. You wouldn't. You go through that. And that maybe is for you, if could be a spell in a treatment center, sort of. And that analogy kind of helps them see, okay, I understand that now. I get where you're coming from.
I tend to find that the people often, when they're talking about mental health, maybe engaging with it for the first time, analogies often really help. And I know people say, if you broke your leg, you'd call an ambulance. But if you, you know, and sometimes they're a little bit tired of that now. But I think those analogies are still crucial, because I believe, Rob, we're still in a world where people are only just turning on to what this mental health thing is, and about how, oh yeah, I never thought of it like that. And actually, if you provide an analogy, a rehab thing, a pre-season thing, those analogies work for people, because it gives them almost a permission to understand something which previously they'd never even thought about before. And for sometimes they feel a little bit trite or a little bit corny, but I think there's still a big place for analogies in the world of mental health.
Yeah, I think, because I could sit there and spout theory at them, and they just go, well, what on earth are you talking about? You know, what especially I think, I think with a lot of people, you know, their initial spell maybe in therapy is kind of a scary thing. And if I can use language and ideas that are sort of relevant and comfortable for them, it helps them to go, oh, right, okay, I see where you're coming from. I understand this now.
Let's touch on this BACP sort of work and survey that's going on at the moment. I think there's two angles to it around men coming forward to talk about depression. I mean, instantly you think, well, are men more depressed? There's a flip side to this for me, potentially, in maybe men are more likely to open up and maybe think, I probably need to get some help around depression. I think that can be seen as potentially rather positive story, that men maybe for the first time are starting to reach out for help. What are you sort of seeing on the front line, if you like, in terms of depression? What are men saying about their feelings of depression?
Well, statistically, men haven't been good at this, have they? sadly, that, you know, it's still the biggest killer. Suicide is still the biggest killer of men under 40. In Europe, a man is four times more likely to take their life than a woman. And the suicide rates in Europe are the highest in the world. So, you know, traditionally, men haven't been good at sort of, and if we think of depression as being the biggest trigger for suicidal ideation, then, you know, traditionally men haven't been good at this. I am beginning to see, and it's really encouraging. Maybe it's just, you know, the people, because when I first started out on the Sporting Chance Counseling Network, most of it was addiction based. You know, it was kind of, I've got a problem with gambling, drinking, drugs. But a lot more recently has been, you know, anxiety, depression, life situations. And I find that really encouraging. I think that's an amazing thing, because, you know, traditionally our society tells us that men keep things in, stiff upper lip, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And you know, I think it's brilliant. I think this campaign is brilliant because it sort of identifies areas that most men, maybe, or even their partners or their loved ones would just sort of brush aside. I mean, Coronation Street, Kevin Webster, I don't know if he's still in, I haven't watched it for years, but Kevin Webster gets back from his week in being a mechanic in the garage, you know, and Sally says to him, "Oh, you've had a tough week. Why don't you just go down to the Rovers and have a few pints?" That traditionally was the way that men dealt with it. They'd stand with other men, they'd talk about football, you know, and have a kebab. And that was it. And that doesn't help.
I wanted to, we touched on this in the podcast last week, but I'll mention it again, the idea of race, risk-taking, anger, isolation, substance abuse and exhaustion as the sort of the signs and symptoms. In your experience, we'll be talking about men, that they are angry, that they are isolated, that they are substance abuse, like, or do they have to be self-aware of that, or can you pinpoint those things within their experience? I talk about, you know, Kevin Webster, if you think, I have these blowout weeks where everything's, you know, awful, and I go to the pub and I drink 25 pints just to relax. And after that, Rob, I can relax if I'm in 25 pints. But you might go, well, actually, that's a sign that there's a substance abuse potential issue there. Do you have to be aware of this? Is it about somebody spotting one of these things in you? Is it about hearing about this campaign and going, oh, actually, yeah, that I'm feeling really angry, or I feel angry all the time, or just recently, or I've been having these blowout moments? There's got to be that element of self-awareness, but I think a lot of people will live with any one of these five and actually just think that that's who they are and what life is like.
Yeah, and I think it's important that that's not an exhaustive list. I mean, that there are other things, indicators as well. And I'm definitely not going to be some sort of puritanical person who says going down for a pint at the pub on a Friday night is a bad thing, and alarm bells should be ringing, and you know, you spoke of Batman, you know, people in BACP capes should be dashing through the front of your house to sort of come and, you know, sort you out. It is when it becomes our more than just our coping strategy, you know, when we become reliant, or when the anger is coming out, a misappropriated anger. I mean, people get angry. It's actually kind of good to get angry sometimes, because it kind of releases that stuff. It's that suppressed stuff that comes out inappropriately, risk-taking. Everyone takes a risk every now and again, but when it's almost compulsive risk-taking. You know, only people with kind of significant depression thinks that isolation is the cure for loneliness. You know, it's that idea of I'm so wretched that I can't even be around people is a really worrying sign, I think.
Can I ask you about isolation? Because isolation is, people associate it with people being on their own. And there is that element sometimes, particularly in the world we're in now, that, you know, people might, you know, live in a flat share, not really see people, go to work, might even work from home. I guess the question is, does isolation have to involve you being on your own? Or can there be a feeling of isolation that men experience in particular, where they might have the world moving around them, but they feel isolated? I think that's maybe one of those conversations that we've not quite got our heads around as a society, that you can feel lonely in a room full of people. You can feel lonely, you know, at your own birthday party, potentially.
Yeah, it is. And it's the idea of judging everyone's outsides by your own insides, and sitting in a room with people and thinking, I am the worst, most despicable person in this room, and I cannot bring myself to engage. I might be present physically, but emotionally and mentally I am elsewhere, because I cannot bear the thought of interacting with these people, because my self-worth, you know, my self-esteem is so low that I feel like I'm something on the bottom of your shoe. And also there's a difference between being alone and being lonely. You know, sometimes it's kind of nice to be in our own company. And actually the ability to sit with ourselves and be at peace with ourselves is an incredible gift. It's a wonderful thing. That doesn't mean I'm isolating and I'm lonely. What it means is, at this moment in time, it's okay to be just sat here looking out the window, enjoying the rain pouring down. You know, it's not clearly definable. It's what's behind that situation that's the key.
And exhaustion's in that list as well. I'll mention that one as well. Do you find that maybe? I'm a dad of two young children now. And I've worked in the media, so I've done those, you know, those breakfast shifts or those late shifts and those long days and all that kind of thing. I value now my sleep more than anything, because I find that that's the great reset at the end of each day. And if I just notice that little bit of, you know, if the hours creep up and then the sleep reduces, I feel it straight. So I probably then notice that maybe some of those other factors creep in. And I might think, oh, you know what, I will have a glass of wine tonight because I've worked a long day and I've been really tired. So maybe I'll turn to alcohol and drink on a night I wouldn't normally drink. And that's potentially not a problem. But at the same time, I will notice as well that I'm a little bit rattier with the kids because my emotional state's not quite there. Tiredness, exhaustion reduces your creativity, reduces your sense of ability to get out and about and almost do something about some of those other factors as well. I don't think we maybe have enough awareness of how important feeling good about yourself and actually feeling like you've got the energy to take on the day is. I think it's huge.
And there's different types of exhaustion. I'm sure you've been out for a huge country walk, all that fresh air, bracing wind. You know, you get home in the evening, you get on your sofa or whatever. You go, oh, I'm exhausted, but it's a lovely exhaustion. It's kind of, my goodness, I've done all this and I'm kind of okay. And then there's the one when the alarm goes off Monday morning and you might have been in bed for 8 hours, but the alarm goes off and you go, I'm so tired. I can't bear to do this. I'm too tired. That idea of being sick and tired it's kind of, I can't go on anymore. So there are different types of issues. I mean, you know, you've got two kids. I've been there. Don't go for a third. Oh my goodness, that's a quantum leap.
Don't get outnumbered. That's the theory.
Yeah, there's more of us there encircling. What do we do? But you know, we are going to get tired, and it's a bit like that idea of loneliness and going to the pub for a couple of pints. Yeah, it's kind of okay. It's when it becomes compulsive and it becomes infringing on others. I did the alarm bells always go off when I have a client or I'm with someone and they say certain words like, I'm trying to control my drinking at the moment. Now, for me, anyone who's trying to control their drinking, there is something going on. It's a bit like, I like sausage sandwiches. I don't try and control the number of sausage sandwiches I have in a week. Because if I fancy one, I'll have one. And then I don't think about it. and then until the next one. But if I'm controlling my drink all the time, I'm going, right, it's Friday today. Oh my goodness, it's Friday. I can have a drink. Oh my God. So that kind of obsessive, compulsive thoughts around it are coming in. So what's that about? You know, what's beneath that? What is going on in here that I'm sort of clinging on with my knuckles, sort of, because I need to control that drinking.
Absolutely. People can head to the BACP website /raise, and you can find out more about this campaign. As Rob mentions there, it's not just those signs and symptoms, but there'll be some good clues within there, and certainly might just make you think, oh, maybe that is me or someone that I care about. Rob, thank you so much for your time. The sausage sandwich analogy there, we snuck another one in, didn't we, before the end? Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate the work you're doing, and thanks for speaking to us today on the program.
I'm off for a sausage sandwich.
Sounds like a plan.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.